Welcome to Midpoint. I'm Sean Canan. I'm the host of Midpoint Monday. Today, we'll talk about the aftermath of Hurricane Irma. We'll hear how the migrant farming community of the Coalition of Immokalee Workers has been affected. I also want to hear if you're still without power or what your stories were during Irma. Here's the phone number for you to call in, 813-239-9663. You can email DJ at WMNF.org or text us at 813-433-0885. And WMNF is a very important resource in this community, and we were able to stay on the air during Hurricane Irma because of your financial support. It was a rough time for all of us. Our fall drive starts October 4th. We've always been able to broadcast because of your donations. It's the main source of funding here. We'll need you like you need us. You can give now at WMNF.org or by calling 813-238-8001. Let's get through this together. Well, again, I'm Sean Canan. This is Midpoint, and here's the number again, 813-239-9663. I'm going to read a little bit from the website of the Coalition of Immokalee Workers. The CIW is a union of migrant farm workers. When Hurricane Irma ripped through Florida, farm worker families throughout the state moved into survival mode. Those who could hurriedly packed suitcases with their most precious belongings and headed north, most with no particular destination, in search of a safe place out of the storm's path. Most, however, had no choice but to stay home, seeking the safest place to ride out the hurricane, be it their bathroom, a nearby church, or one of the many shelters opened by each Florida county. Over one long night this past Sunday, Irma darkened millions of homes and businesses, affecting over half the state's population of 20 million people, caused billions of dollars in property damage, and took 26 lives in Florida as of this posting. Over the past several days, the Immokalee community, which, along with other already impoverished farmworker communities in southwest Florida, took Irma's hardest punch, delivered by the fierce winds and torrential rains of the hurricane's eyewall northeast quadrant. And it has slowly emerged from survival mode and has begun to look ahead to a recovery and rebuilding process that will take months, if not years, to complete. So that's some information from the Coalition of Immokalee Workers, the CIW. And we're going to talk today about how they were affected by the Hurricane Irma. And our guest today in the studio is Roger Butterfield. Welcome to back to WMNF's Midpoint, Roger.
Thanks for having me.
What's your affiliation with the CIW? How are you connected to the Coalition of Immokalee Workers?
Well, I work with our network of allies who are students and youth all over the country, known as the Student Farm Worker Alliance, since about 2001. We've been working directly with the coalition to assist them in their fight for better wages and working conditions and to stand in solidarity with their campaign for fair food. So I'm on the steering committee, which is a body of about 10 students across the country helping coordinate strategy.
What can you tell us about what it looks like in Immokalee today and how the farm workers are faring?
So Immokalee is a community that has been in a state of emergency for decades. Housing is cramped, unsafe for a storm. Often you will have people packed into very little trailers, you know, shotgun style housing with about a dozen people. And, you know, rent is very high, wages are very low. So when the storm ripped through, and hit Immokalee and the nearby citrus capital of La Belle. Trailers and wooden shacks that were just not made to stand up to a hurricane had their roofs taken off, just were blown away or collapsed. Immokalee has been flooded for a while. Thankfully, the waters have receded, but people are still without power. That obviously, as many of us know here in the state, means that any perishable food that you have in the refrigerator is, gone. This is a community that is lacking some basic necessities, you know, food, water, electricity. Anybody with medical conditions, is in danger.
Our guest is Roger Butterfield with Student Farm Worker Alliance, and you're listening to WMNF's Midpoint. I'm Sean Canaan. It's 12:11 in the afternoon, and we are taking your calls. What questions do you have about the farm worker community and coalition of Immokalee workers? 813-239-9663. If you would rather email dj@wmnf.org or text 813-433-0885. Roger, how is aid getting to Immokalee, the town of Immokalee, which is a very rural and far from pretty much everything? How is aid getting there?
So aid is coming largely from here, from the Tampa Bay area, although it is coming from, you know, some other places. Here in Tampa, we have a coalition of groups, including Mutual Aid Disaster Relief, Tampa Food Not Bombs, Black Lives Matter, Hillsborough Community Protection Coalition. There's a lot of others. I apologize for not naming them all. But they are, the Democratic Socialists of America have really showed up. They have been helping to coordinate trucks that we have sent down to Immokalee, just filled with water, with feminine hygiene products, everything that is needed for, mothers, like Pedialyte, and basic necessities. I believe as of today, we have sent over 10 tons down to Immokalee from Tampa.
And part of that is being coordinated by one of the groups that you mentioned, the Mutual Aid Disaster Relief. Can you tell more about that? Is that a group that you can give us a little bit more information about? They're not like one of these huge groups where you just call or text $10 to Red Cross or something like that. This is a local grassroots neighborhood group, really, that's just having a huge impact in the amount of supplies that are going down to Immokalee.
It definitely is. My friend and comrade, Jimmy Dunson, has been a very powerful force in creating that group and driving it, although I know he wouldn't take all the credit for it, and rightly so. There's been so many people that have added their hands to make light work. Mutual Aid Disaster Relief is based on the idea that people have the right and capacity to determine what their recovery looks like. We believe in solidarity, not charity. We think that charity will involve an uneven power relationship. Groups like the Red Cross, will come to communities and frankly not even do what they're supposed to do, but they will do it in a very top-down way. They will provide the relief that they deem is necessary. Mutual Aid Disaster Relief believes in this different vision that our own communities can determine how we will recover. I'll also mention that I've heard that Red Cross did not even show up to many other shelters in Miami. And so it says something really of that we have community groups here that are not professionals that are doing these, this kind of important work.
Let me read this list from Mutual Aid Disaster Relief. They say the food is most needed: fruit, fresh and dried, tostadas, canned beans, tuna, sardines, sausages, peanut butter and jam, bread, toilet paper, diapers, feminine hygiene products, underwear and socks, water, chainsaws, gas, big tarps. And if you have any of these items and you want to donate them, I assume, are they still taking donations?
Yes, we are.
They can be dropped off at 5107 Central Avenue in Tampa. And that's next to a church that I forgot to write down the name of. Do you happen to...
Yes, it's St. Paul's Lutheran Church.
So this is—it's not affiliated with the church. We're just giving you a geographic landmark.
Yes, although I will say that they provided us some shelter, and it was very much appreciated.
5107 Central Avenue in Tampa, and that's for Mutual Aid Disaster Relief for the Coalition of Immokalee Workers. And I'm also during this show, I want to hear from you. What was your Irma experience like, especially if you maybe didn't have, if you still don't have power? I want to hear from you, or if you had power gone for a long time. We're also, we're chatting here with Roger about the CIW, the Coalition of Immokalee Workers, but I also want to hear your stories in Tampa Bay. And we have someone on the phone. On the phone right now is Bob, who is actually a volunteer at MNF. And Bob, you were without power until yesterday, isn't that right? All right, I put you on the air right now. Sorry, Bob. Can you start over?
Yeah, we actually were without power until about 2 or 3 o'clock in the afternoon yesterday, so about 8 days. And our experience, My observation was around day five was when we reached the tipping point and it started to get a little more irritating. But our main issue is with Duke. I mean, I really don't think Duke Energy had a clue as to what was going on. First of all, it took us 4 or 5 days to actually get a human being to answer the phone. And then when we finally talked to somebody, they seemed surprised that we were without power. And then, again, when the trucks came to restore power, they told us that there were only 24 or 5 houses that didn't have power in this area, and that's one of the reasons that we were lower on the totem pole. But there were blocks and blocks and blocks of people that didn't have power. So, I don't know how we can make Duke be held accountable for this, but to me... As someone that's done emergency planning in several capacities, their response plan is just horrid and terrible. They didn't have a clue. They had nobody to provide customer service. They can say what they want, but they just had not a clue as to what was going on with who had power and who didn't have.
And I've heard this, and I've read it in online, and I don't know if this is your experience, let me know if it was, where people would contact the energy company, whether it was FPL or Duke or TECO or one of the others, and they would say, look, here's my address, and I'm without power, and then they would look the person up in the system, and they said, no, you do have power, that's why we're not in your neighborhood, because you have power.
Absolutely, that's what happened. They have an automated system. And that automated system again was dismal because you would enter it, you would enter your information and even customer specific information like our account number and everything. And it would say there's not been an outage reported in this area. So absolutely, that's the truth.
All right, thanks, Bob. I'm going to move on to other callers. Is there anything else that you'd like to add to the conversation?
Nope, I'm all right.
All right. Thanks so much for calling in. 813-239-9663. If you'd like to join the conversation, we're talking about the Coalition of Immokalee Workers and how they've been affected by the Hurricane Irma. But I'm also talking about you and what your experience has been like, especially with whether you had a power outage and how you were dealing with your power company. Let's talk to Mike. I don't know where you are, Mike, but you're driving.
That's right. Can you hear me?
Yeah, you're on. Go ahead.
Okay. Yeah. I'm in Brandon. I grew up in LaBelle, down in that area, and I've had part-time jobs when I was a college student down there, and some of them were delivering and picking up things in those camps for pickers and sugarcane cutters and so forth. And I realized that there's been a lot of publicity for, Immokalee victims of different kinds of things, particularly the hurricane. But there's also, unless it's changed, a lot of small camps that are in the middle of nowhere down there. And they service agricultural things like sugarcane and tomatoes and watermelons. And they're in places where people don't even know they're there. What's been done in the aftermath of the storm, is this organization actually trying to reach those people?
All right, Mike, good question. And Roger, what do you know about that? Is it just focusing on the CIW, or are they going out further into the community?
That's a really excellent question. So to give a little context, Immokalee is where the CIW is based. That's where many of the tomato fields are. But CIW, is not the Coalition of Immokalee Tomato Pickers. It's the Coalition of Immokalee Workers. And they view themselves as an organization for any low-wage worker in that area. Some of the first actions that they ever did, one of the founders, Lucas Benitez, was an orange picker who walked off the bus in solidarity with striking tomato pickers. They've always had this, relationship with all parts of the industry and all over the state, really. They've been going across the state for several years now and throughout the Southeast, really, talking to farm workers about their rights under the Fair Food Program that has been created. And really, like, the orange pickers, you know, have been, the harvest has been devastated. You know, this is going to extremely impact orange pickers, and it's definitely going to impact the tomato pickers as well, and really all of these industries. So the coalition has been doing some work for that. We as Mutual Aid Disaster Relief have gone out to, I believe, Fellsmere and Apopka and some other farm worker communities. The problem is definitely, as the caller said, there is so much to do. You know, there's all these small communities. I know that some people have also gone to Wamama. I hope I'm saying that right. And you know, there's still people isolated. So we're hoping that however we can, you know, through radio, through social media, through interpersonal connections, or even just by showing up, talking to organizations like Farmworker Association of Florida, that we can get to the people most affected.
Any other follow-up, Mike?
No, that's okay. It's just that I know that you're mentioning communities, Fellsmere and so forth, which most people never heard of, but you know, those are still big communities compared to what's out there in the real sticks. You'll have like a concrete block shotgun where it's a family to a room, not a family to an apartment, but a family to a room. And it's got one toilet, maybe a stove, and that's it. And most people don't even know those are there, was my point.
Great. All right. Excellent point. Oh, sorry to cut you off, Mike, but thanks so much for calling in. I'm sure it seems like this group will maybe try to make an effort to find out who needs help and where they can get it. But thanks for that call, Mike. 813-239-9663. If you'd like to join the conversation, my guest is Roger Butterfield. He's with the Student Farmworker Alliance, and he also is involved in Mutual Aid Disaster Relief. I'm Sean Canaan. I'm the host of Midpoint Monday. You're listening to 88.5 FM WMN. F Tampa. I'm going to go back to the phones in just a minute. I want to read a little bit from this email we just got from Hillsborough County. Hillsborough County begins its residential yard debris collection beginning today. Trucks will be working systematically through neighborhoods to collect yard debris related to Hurricane Irma. Trucks may have to make several passes over the next few weeks due to the extent of storm damage, and to ensure the removal of all yard debris put out by residents. Do not block access to stormwater drains, utility boxes, or roadways. So that's Hillsborough County's note about debris removal, and other counties are similar. Yeah, and here's a business recovery center now open in Pinellas County. Federal assistance is available to local businesses impacted by Hurricane Irma. Small Business Administration is opening a business recovery center at Pinellas County Economic Development in Largo. And businesses who have been impacted by Hurricane Irma can get an assistance in completing their SBA application. The center is open Monday through Saturday, 9 a.m. to 6 p.m. And the address is St. Petersburg College's Epicenter, 13805 58th Street North, Suite 1200 in Largo, and that's for Business Recovery Center, now open in Pinellas County. So I'm just reading a couple of these announcements as they come in. If you'd like to join the conversation, it's 813-239-9663. Our guest is Roger Butterfield with the Student Farm Worker Alliance. Let's go now to Ernest in Temple Terrace. Hi, Ernest.
Hey, how you doing, guys?
Very good. How are you?
Okay. Got a first day. People all stayed in the house with one room. That sounds like sharecropping. And the second thing, what he needs to do, if he had that problem with Duke, either him or somebody need to go through, get a list of all the people who were out of power that long, get in touch with their congressman, or if that doesn't work, get in touch with the local news, because that's ridiculous for it to be that long. Just suggestions. That's it. I'm not going to stay long.
All right. Thank you, Ernest. Thanks for that call. And let me read another, I guess you would call it a bad luck story here. From South St. Pete, CT writes, Irma destroyed my rooftop solar water heater, and the gallons of water that must have been pouring through the pipes ruptured the house line at the meter, so my water is turned off. on the Monday morning after Irma, so that was a week ago, I filed with my insurance company, who told me I should wait to repair anything until the adjuster came. I have not heard from the claims adjuster yet. I read in the Wall Street Journal that Florida does not have enough claims adjusters. I'm curious if anyone else in the Bay Area is having the same trouble getting an adjuster to assess the damage. My power, Duke, finally came back last Friday night. So that's CT in South St. Pete. And that's interesting that your insurance company said don't repair anything, because I've heard other insurance companies say take photos of all the damage and then get it repaired and they will work from there. So I don't know what the right answer is. It sounds like I'm hearing conflicting information from the insurance companies. But if you are going a week without water and you can't repair your house because the claims adjuster hasn't come out yet, you might want to see if you can talk to a lawyer or something about, what's the right thing to do? Do you just get your things fixed, or do you have to sit around in a broken house until they decide to send somebody out to you? If anyone knows a better answer to that question, give us a call, 813-239-9663. I would definitely make sure you get lots of photos of everything, so that if you do have to repair things before the claims adjuster came, you have proof of what was broken. 813-239-9663. You can email DJ at WMNF.org or text us at 813-433-0885. You're listening to WMNF Tampa 88.5 FM. And Hal in St. Pete. Hi, Hal. What's on your mind?
Oh, hey. I have a quick question for the coalition. Is there a place where you can put or give cash donation?
Yes, they have some sort of fundraising online. Is that right? I'm a little leery about talking about that, but since you asked, what's the site?
Yes, so there is a donation site. I apologize because I don't remember the exact name. It's one that I haven't used before. I believe it's Act Blue. But if you go to the CIW's website, ciw-online.org, one of the most recent posts is, donate Hurricane Irma Relief Fund for Immokalee and Southwest Florida communities, farm worker communities, excuse me. And it will have a link to, place to send via PayPal, I believe, donations. As far as cash donations, you could bring that to the 5107 North Central Avenue location that we have here in Tampa, and we will buy supplies, whether, Pedialyte or food, whatever is most needed. So both of those are viable options.
Well, thank you. The rest I want to say was about the supposed service of Duke Energy. I live in St. Pete in a fairly centrally located area. Our neighborhood was out of power from Saturday 6 o'clock or Sunday 6 o'clock to Saturday, just this last Saturday. We saw numerous trucks. They would come into our area and with orders to fix the lines, but because the debris had to be cleared off the line, they had to leave. This happened three times until we got tired and removed the trees from the lines ourselves. The very next day, we had power. The only Duke representative I ever saw was a young lady who couldn't have been more than 22 years old, who was there Wednesday to inform us that they were ready to start step one in fixing our power. We had damage assessors coming in with maps that they had no idea how to read because they were from out of state and they were poorly drawn. Even now, after they fixed the power, we still have debris on power lines, and it's just a big mess.
Did you ever try to contact Duke and say, my power's out and send somebody?
We contacted the automated line every day. Every day they would say that we had power. And what's worse is they would tell you to check the circuit breakers. That's just almost insulting.
Yeah, like you're an idiot or something.
So anyway, that's my story. I feel a lot better now. Thank you very much.
Cool. Thanks for calling in, Hal. Sorry, glad you got your power back, but sorry you had to go through all that. A lot of us have been going through a lot in the last couple of weeks. And so I guess, I think people get a sense of solidarity. I don't know if I'm speaking just for myself or not, but I think that, you know, seeing our neighbors in need and being able to help them and vice versa, being able to get help from neighbors, I think is, I don't know, it's there's something about that that is pretty cool, I think. 813-239-9663, if you'd like to join the conversation. Let's hear from Elizabeth in Riverview. Hi, Elizabeth.
Good afternoon. Yes, it is afternoon, is it not? In listening to your guest, did I hear him say that Red Cross did not really live up to their reputation of being very helpful?
Yeah, so as far as the Red Cross, there are a lot of examples that go back a ways about their unhelpfulness. Yes, sir.
I wasn't really listening enough to make certain that you had said it.
Yes.
You want something historical? My husband, who of course is dead now, was in service during World War II, as many of the gentlemen were. He said that Red Cross was an absolute disaster with help. He said they depended upon the Salvation Army, but the Red Cross did nothing. Now, this is a long time for them to have that dreadful reputation and still claim that they are doing what they say they should do. I think that's very sad, and I'm sorry to hear it. And I'm very sorry that you all were affected by it, too. It just... when you hear the name Red Cross, you think, oh, yes, they're wonderful people. They come right in and do all these smart... They don't. And I'm very disappointed. Well, that's about all I have to say. Thank you for letting me vent. Goodbye.
All right. Thanks so much for calling in, Elizabeth. Do you have anything? Thank you. Do you have anything you'd like to add?
Well, I will say that for anybody who knows people volunteering in the Red Cross, I do want to say that it's no diss, I guess, against them. You know, one thing that I will cite is their treatment of Haiti relief following the 2010 earthquake. It illustrates, I think, a very good point about why we need bottom-up, solidarity-driven relief efforts, not, you know, what the Red Cross has done. Because, you know, in 2010, when this earthquake hit, Haiti, a massively deforested, devastated country, something that Noam Chomsky, I believe, said Haiti will probably be uninhabitable by the middle of the 21st century. You know, it was devastated to the point that it couldn't even use any infrastructure because it didn't have any left to provide relief to people around the island. And Red Cross came and they built, I believe, 8 houses with $500 million. And when asked where the money went, you know, they kind of threw their hands up. Whereas, like, movements like, I apologize, I don't speak Creole, so I don't remember the name of this, but MPP, I believe, hate movement for peasants, people's movement for peasants, they provided so much of the relief, much in the way that CIW is taking its lead in Immokalee. The communities that have created their own organizations, those are leading the charge. And if organizations like the Red Cross want to do better, they can follow the lead of those organizations rather than say that they are the ones that, you know, will determine how recovery, what it will look like.
Our guest is Roger Butterfield. He's with the Student Farmworker Alliance. My name is Sean Canaan. I'm the host of Midpoint Monday on 88.5 FM. And we're going now to Chris in St. Pete. Hi, Chris.
Hi, I do have a question about mold remediation, but first want to make sure I get out over the air. Useful tip that I discovered for preserving or extending the life of water filters, and that is if you have a water ionizer, if you take the alkaline water, make the most alkaline water that the machine can make, and soak your filters for, say, at least a half hour or 2 hours, that'll electrostatically draw out the positively charged toxins and pathogens. Most toxins and pathogens are positively charged, so it very effectively will clean the filter, you know, drawing them out from within the filter, and then just flush the filter, let the debris go for maybe a few seconds, and then You'll see it in murky water. Once it's clear, then you'll have a much better water quality. And I learned that because I know that you can soak fruits and vegetables to similarly draw out toxins and pathogens from deep within, or, you know, putting on skin. And I think it's a good idea to drink the alkaline water as well, because it's better hydrating. It has a lower surface tension, so it'll a little bit goes a longer way than just any other kind of water, purified water or anything else. And, you know, the food tastes a lot better, lasts a lot longer, it's a lot more tasty, and you know, you can do taste tests yourself and find that out. But what I wanted to ask about is how to handle a landlord negligence situation. Now that I had water seep in 5 feet in my front door, I've been calling mold assessors and remediation and St. Pete's Health Department, which no longer does mold testing. And they tell me that, and code enforcement tells me that I need to pay for my old mold assessment. I did find out that you can bring your own sample, like I'm planning to do, of my carpet, my moldy carpeting, that's very stained, because apparently the mold had formed before the hurricane, and I hadn't noticed that it was seeping in under the door. And you can bring it to Air Quality Environmental in Seminole. That's at airqualityenvironmental.com. Their number is 813-225-2005. And that's one thing I may end up doing, although it's not as scientific as hiring a mold assessor, which costs in the $400 range, thinking I could just cut out the part of the carpet, as I've warned the landlord I must do, and videotape myself cutting it out and bagging it up. Mold assessor suggests I wear a mask and close off the area of the house, you know, to prevent spores. That one of them suggested I wear a mask that's N as in Nancy 95 or better quality. So I'm trying to figure out what to do here to motivate legally or otherwise the landlord to address the problem. There's particle board underneath the padding and the carpet as well. And like I said, I think the stain had happened before the hurricane, because around the door there's a much darker stain than the 5 feet more recent stain that occurred right after Irma. So any tips that you might have?
Thanks for your questions, Chris.
Or might have.
Yeah, and thank you also for that information. We do have some files, too, through Mutual Aid Disaster Relief, and I'll see if we can get it posted on the Facebook page. Of, you know, tips for gutting houses, for, you know, helping make sure that mold is not lingering. So for landlord situations, this is something that has come up a little bit recently. And although the coalition itself has, by the coalition I mean the Mutual Aid Disaster Relief and like other groups in Tampa, has encountered a little bit. So we're still devising, you know, a strategy for it. But the thing about landlord negligence, in my experience, because, you know, I've worked with some groups that have dealt with it. The law is a tricky situation, because sometimes it'll help you, sometimes it'll be, more often than not, it'll be frustratingly slow. One thing that we've done in the past is, well, there's a story of a few years ago when I worked with an organization called Tampa Solidarity Network. A tenant was not receiving treatment for his bed bugs. You know, it would have cost $500. It was, you know, it was legally required. His landlord was not only refusing to do it, but was targeting him, you know, harassing him. And so a group of us got together with him, and we marched on the landlord, went to her complex, and we gave her a list of demands, like gave her a letter saying, you know, treat the bed bugs or we'll have to take some further action. She immediately tried to evict him. And so we started to flyer around the apartment complex, you know, letting her know, letting them know that, you know, this woman was a slumlord. And then we started to fly the surrounding neighborhood. And then we went directly to her neighborhood and we posted up these flyers, you know, this person is a slumlord and they are abusing their tenants. We went to her church. We did the same thing. We went to the USF basketball game that she liked to attend. Did the same thing. It's, you know, called bird dogging when you follow someone really closely and make their life a little bit miserable until they deal with the situation. And that one, we had the bed bugs treated, and the tenant was no longer the tenant was no longer being harassed. So this is the kind of stuff that, you know, we're willing to do, we're willing to assist with, and really it's all things that you yourself can do, you and your community.
And there are also probably some resources, legal resources, where you can find where there are lawyers that offer community service hours or something where they can maybe give you some advice without charging. I guess you could just search Google or something for that.
There is one that I know of that I don't know if they're offering any of these kind of services, but I know that I believe it's called Bay Area Legal Services, and they tend to be very, good about providing this kind of help. So I would definitely look into them because they're a very solid legal team.
All right, thanks so much for that call, Chris, and thanks for those questions. 813-239-9663. We're hearing your stories about Hurricane Irma. We're also talking about the Coalition of Immokalee Workers. What are migrant farm workers going through during and after Hurricane Irma? My guest is Roger Butterfield. He's with the Student Farm Worker Alliance. And again, the number is 813-239-9663. We have a text message here from 727. He says, or she says, I live in Pinellas County. No power after the Friday midnight restore date. So that was like 3 or 4 days ago when they said all the power would be back on. And so called the Duke's Power Outage Automated Hotline number on Saturday. They were there in an hour. We were lucky no matter what we went through. And so, you know, that's the funny thing is that I'm hearing all of these people who, once they called, or once they called for the 10th time or whatever it was, they got their power back. But I remember at the beginning of the storm, at least my recollection was that essentially they were saying, look, we know where the power outages are. Don't call us. That was, I think, the message that we were getting at the beginning. And then now we're hearing from people who said, well, they had it wrong. We had to call them again. So that's an interesting take on this whole issue. All right, let's see. We have Mike in Tampa. Hi, Mike.
Yeah. I'm curious just when the power came back on for the Immokalee workers, you know, where they're at. My power wasn't back on until Tuesday. I wonder when the power came back on.
Okay, when did the power come back on for the Immokalee workers? And is my impression that I can't see the exact number, 70,000 or so customers in Collier County, a lot of them still don't have power. Is that right, Roger?
That's exactly right. Even the Coalition of Immokalee Workers Community Center and Office is without power. Most of the trailers and housing in Immokalee is still without power.
All right. Thanks, Mike. Thanks for the call. Let's see. We have a different Mike in Inverness. Hi, Mike.
Hello.
You're on.
Yeah, I was calling. I'm up in Inverness. I'm like right off of Withlacoochee. And there's like a little canal that guts in for about a block off of the river, and I'm on the end of it. And I got power, but my canal is full of dead fish. First it was a few, and now I come out today and it's just hundreds and hundreds of them. What can you do? They're starting to stink pretty bad.
Yeah, that's a good question. I mean, I would just start with the county, call the county and let them know, or if you're within a city limits, call the city. Is it tidal there, or are you on the freshwater river?
I'm on the freshwater river.
And is has the water started to drop there, or is it still rising?
No, it's still at the highest it has been since the storm. It's like right about at the top of my dock.
Yeah, I've seen a lot of pictures today of the Withlacoochee rising up over streets and things like that. So it's getting really dangerous there. I hope that your house is safe. Specifically about the fish kill question, I don't know anything about that. If anyone knows what would be causing these fish kills, I mean,
I've heard it was because of the something up with the oxygen in the water from the storm. I don't know.
Yeah, the runoff water would have a lot of
All right. Yep. Well, I was just wondering if anybody out there in radio land had any ideas.
Yeah, try the county first, and if city, if you live in the city. But yeah, we'll also take tips from our listeners if anyone knows. But thanks for letting us know about that, Mike.
All right. You have a great day.
Thank you. You too. 813-239-9663. You know, speaking of fish kills and rising waters, Lake Okeechobee, you know, we got so much rain in South Florida that the Lake Okeechobee situation, we're going to get an update on how high the water is in Lake Okeechobee and what they, you know, what they think about what's going to be happening with them. The winds and rains of Hurricane Irma are gone, but WQCS's Jill Roberts has this report that the danger at Lake Okeechobee is not over.
The storm dumped lots of water in the state. According to the National Weather Service in Melbourne, the two-day total in Fort Pierce alone was more than 21 inches. As Irma's rainfall reaches Lake Okeechobee, the increasing level could cause problems with the aging Herbert Hoover Dyke, a 143-mile earthen dam that surrounds the lake, parts of which were built in the late 1940s. Mark Perry, the executive director of the Florida Oceanographic Society in Stewart, says the lake level is already on the rise.
We're going to still see that effect for several weeks going forward. And possibly, you know, if the lake rises too high, then, of course, as they've started releases out of Lake Okeechobee to keep it down, because we have other tropical systems perhaps coming and more rain effects. And so the rain is mainly what lasts over time, even though the immediate storm surge flooding is past.
It'll be a few weeks yet, Perry says, till the water that fell in the north and central parts of the state travels through the Kissimmee River into Lake Okeechobee.
Let's look at it this way. 1 foot on Lake Okeechobee is 152 billion gallons. So take 5 days at 30 billion gallons a day, you've raised the lake by 1 foot. And if you're only dropping it by letting out 2 billion gallons a day, you're still going to raise it in about 10 or 12 days, it'll still raise a foot. So it goes from 15 to 16 to maybe even 17 feet.
Nearly $900 million has been spent to reinforce the dike beginning in 2001. That work includes installing a partial cutoff wall along the southeast part of the dike and removing and replacing water control structures such as culverts. A Lloyd's of London analysis shows more than 400,000 residents and their homes and businesses would be at risk if the dike were to fail. John Campbell, public affairs specialist with the Army Corps of Engineers in Jacksonville, which maintains the dike and manages the lake, says there was little damage due to Irma's pounding.
Just a little bit of minor erosion in some areas that you would see with any heavy rain event. The dike is fine. We are keeping our eyes on the water levels in the lake. Irma dumped quite a lot of precipitation, not only over the lake, but in the watershed to the north and west of the lake. That water's now starting to find its way into Lake Okeechobee.
For that reason, Campbell says, the Army Corps has started releasing water into the St. Lucie River, sending it east. They hope to time these releases to coincide with low tide, so flooding doesn't result for residents downstream of the St. Lucie Lock and Dam, west of the Turnpike in Martin County.
And the lake has risen considerably. It started just a little bit under 11 foot. That's elevation 11 foot on June 1st, and now it's up to 14. And we think it's going to, just from this event alone, it's going to go up to 17 feet or close to it, which if it got to 17 feet, that would be the highest it's been in over 10 years.
Inspections of the dike are currently being done monthly, but Campbell says that will change if the water does indeed continue to rise as expected. There may be other big problems, says Mark Perry of the Florida Oceanographic Society. Irma's rains decreased the salinity level in the Indian River Lagoon to zero. Lake Okeechobee releases keep those salinity levels from returning to normal. Releases to the east were resumed after Irma passed.
We saw immediately on the 10th, as soon as Irma came through, we saw the salinities in the St. Lucie estuary drop from, you know, 6 to 20 parts per thousand down to zero. And they've stayed that way for now, you know, 5, 6, 7 days now. But it's going to continue. And if that continues for more than 28 days for oysters or 9 days, 12 days for seagrass habitat, then we're at zero, you know, freshwater conditions, then we're going to see some damage to the habitat itself.
For each foot the lake rises above 15 feet, the chance of the dike failing increases. Should it ever reach the 21-foot mark, that probability nears 100%. Perry says there are mitigation programs in progress to help keep the water from reaching that mark, but they're years from being ready to institute. For now, water releases from the lake are the only option. I'm Jill Roberts in Fort Pierce.
Well, that was a story about Lake Okeechobee. And the reason I decided to play that during this show is because Lake Okeechobee is really, you know, part of the whole Southwest Florida community down there. All the workers in Immokalee and those other communities that were mentioned around that same time, like LaBelle, they're all affected by Lake Okeechobee. If there's some sort of dam breach, that would be serious trouble for all the people in Southwest Florida. Well, you're listening to Midpoint. I'm Sean Canaan. I'm the host of Midpoint Monday. We're going to go back to the phone lines in just a second. I have Linda up first and then Amy, but then you can get in the queue as well. 813-239-9663. We're talking about Hurricane Irma, its effect on the Coalition of Immokalee Workers, its effect on you and our community. My guest is Roger Butterfield with the Student Farm Worker Alliance. Linda, you're on the line. What would you like to say?
Thank you. I would just like to say, I think what most people want to know, no matter what county or what part of Florida, I think what our concerns are, all this good talk about all the things and programs, we got another hurricane on the way, and we would probably like to hear from you guys, especially because we like you so much and we trust you so much. We would like to know what's going on, Maria.
Yeah,
that's my deal. I want to know what's going on, Maria, because if I don't hear it, what can I contribute? What can I do? What can I hope for?
Yeah, I can give you an update right now. Right now, Hurricane Maria is still strengthening in the near the Leeward Islands of the Caribbean. It's expected to make landfall in the islands of the Caribbean, really affect Puerto Rico and the Dominican Republic and some of the smaller islands over there.
Right
now, so it's still very early to tell for Florida, but the tracks, the projected path brings it way off the east coast of Florida. I apologize for the slip of the tongue there. Off the east coast of Florida. So it does not look like it'll be affecting Florida directly. Now, this is a week out, so we'll be monitoring it and updating you constantly about Hurricane Maria.
What I'm saying is I think most of us, you know, people with money and people that don't, that's what we want to know. Because it's been a horrible season so far, and that's what the main thing is, not talking about these programs and governments and what they will do and what they don't do. If we have to deal with another hurricane, it's all going to change anyway, right? You understand what I'm saying?
I think I get what you're saying, and I appreciate your input.
Oh.
All right.
Please keep us posted on that hurricane, please.
Will do.
Thank you.
All right. Thanks so much, Linda. Thanks for that call. If you'd like to join the conversation, it's 813-239-9663. You can email us at dj@wmnf.org or text us at 813-433-0885. It's 12:54 in the afternoon. We have about 7 minutes left in the show. Let's hit Amy right now. Amy in St. Petersburg.
Hello. Hi, this is Amy in St. Pete. Am I on?
You're live on the air.
Okay, yeah. Talking about the fish kill, he was wondering, you know, as far as this river having hundreds of fish dead in there, it, you know, I don't know if he realizes there was a negative storm surge. So the bay pulled out so far, that sucks a lot of water out of the feeder rivers and creeks and stuff that feed from the bay. The water that pulls in and out, it pulls that water out as well. So there might be some deeper pockets where some fish, you know, kind of got stuck in very shallow areas, and the water was pulled out so long that the fish just basically got stuck without any water, and they came back. So, I mean, I don't know why you wouldn't call the Fish and Wildlife Commission and ask them about whether or not somebody can come and clean it out, but, you know, or a neighborhood the neighborhood association if he's got a city councilman or something like that for his area. But it, I'm pretty sure it was from the negative storm surge.
All right. Thanks so much for that. I appreciate you calling in, Amy. Thanks for the call. 813-239-9663 or DJ at WMNF.org. If you have a question about the Coalition of Immokalee Workers, if you'd like to tell us your stories about dealing with the electric companies during and after Hurricane Irma, give us a call, 813-239-9663. You're listening to 88.5 FM, WMNF Tampa. Jay in St. Petersburg, you're on the air.
Thank you. Good afternoon. And just wanted to add on that there's a bill in Congress that could probably augment disaster relief. And as you know, that I've been working for years on bringing back a program from Franklin Roosevelt called the Civilian Conservation Corps. And it's H.R. 2206, the 21st Century CCC Act. And back in the Depression, they had camps all over the country. And when there was a disaster like the Ohio floods of 1937, they put camps out there in the Ohio Valley and all over from Pittsburgh down to Cairo. And there was over 500 people, well, 380 people passed then, died. And there was over a million people affected. And they helped correct, they went to the different little towns and hamlets along the river. And it was, the flood stage was so high that they were feeding people with their camp stoves. They brought them out of the camps and the barracks and set them up that they almost were reached by the floodwaters. But this program would probably help in disaster relief and also clean up afterwards. They would also be good first responders if we brought these this program back and we put our young people to work and give them something to do. And accomplish, and they would be proud of their service to our country if we could bring this program back.
All right, thanks for that. Thank you for that. So, if the CCC bill, the Civilian Conservation Corps bill, would pass, there would be jobs, and the government would also assist people with relief efforts. 813-239-9663. We've only got about 3 minutes left. Roger, I'll get back to the phone lines in just a second. Frank, I'll get to you in just a minute, but I want to ask Roger the connection here between climate change and these storms. So these are people, the most vulnerable people in the community, the farm workers, the migrant farm workers that are maybe in danger of being rounded up in raids for, you know, immigration raids. They also do backbreaking work for virtually no pay. And yet they're kind of like the victims on the front lines of the climate crisis. What's the connection here between climate and the Coalition of Immokalee Workers?
Well, about 3 years ago, the coalition actually attended the People's Climate March in New York City, which was, I believe, the largest convergence in North American history. I might be wrong about that, but over 300,000 people in New York City marched, people who lived there, survivors of Hurricane Sandy, indigenous people, even migrant farm workers from China. And the coalition went there and they talked a little bit about why it affected them. This is the CIW's Lupe Gonzalo. And she said that as farm workers, we are deeply affected by climate change and environmental degradation. First, it affects our work. Extreme temperatures and other impacts of climate change have a direct impact on farm workers. Second, and most importantly, we're all connected. We all must fight for a better future. And in order for us to leave a better world for our children, we must have clean air, clean water, and sustainable energy. It is time the major corporations contributing to climate change take responsibility for their actions and start protecting the environment. The planet is the most important gift that we have. And to me, that, you know, is pretty symbolic of how the coalition is always on the front lines of not simply their basic survival, but on a just and better world.
Well, that's all the time we have for in the show. I do apologize to Frank. I told you you'd get on, but we ran out of time. I'm sorry about that. But thank you for joining us on Midpoint today, Roger.
Thank you for having me.
Roger Butterfield is with the Student Farmworker Alliance. I want to thank everyone who called, emailed, and texted today. If you're still on hold or if you'd like to leave a voicemail with your thoughts, call me at 813-238-8001, extension 114, and I'll play your message next show. You can also join the conversation online at WMNF.org/news or on Facebook or Twitter at WMNF News. I want to thank Alvaro Montealegre and Frank Knox. I'm Sean Canaan. I'm the host of WMNF News Midpoint Monday. Tomorrow at noon, your hero Mark Bureau will host Midpoint Tuesday. Stay tuned now for Craig Kopp and Executive Session. That's coming up after NPR headlines on WMNF Tampa, St. Petersburg, Sarasota.